Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Coach Chat. I'm Laurie Lawson, and my fantastic co-host is the always amazing.
Well, thank you, Laurie. Bernie Siegel calling in from the Catskill Mountains in New York.
Ah, okay. And we have a guest who's on the whole other coast that we're going to get to in just a minute. So I'm calling in from New York City, so we've got everything pretty much covered here. Let me tell you a little bit about Coach Chat. We believe at Coach Chat that if you change your perspective, you can change your life. We developed this show for coaches and those interested in one of the fastest-growing professions in the world today. And we hook you up with some of the world's leading coaches who share their expertise. And they give you tips and takeaways for expanding and improving your life and business. And we have really made a big score today. Our guest is Saramish Govindaraj. Okay, and we're not going to ever say that again. We're going to call him Saj. But I got it out once and I'm pleased. So, Saj, welcome to Coach Chat.
Thank you, Laurie. Pleasure being with you guys.
Let me tell you a little bit about Saj, because I could tell you how many credentials he has, but it would take the entire show. So I'm going to give you the highlights. He is a founder and professional executive coach at Coach for Excellence. He's a co-founder of Track Assessment Systems. He's an MCC with the International Coach Federation, and he's a certified master trainer with Points of View, which is where Sai and I met many, many, many years ago. So, Sai, welcome to Coach Chat. We are thrilled that we're horning in on your United States vacation and getting you to be on the show. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Laurie. It's a pleasure being with you.
And we'll let Bernie take it away with his first question, and then we'll just keep asking you stuff. How's that?
Great. So welcome to the show. I'm a little jealous you're in a warmer climate than we are here in New York. But someday we'll be able to travel also. And I've been looking at your two websites, one website focusing on your school and the other on coaching itself. They're very well put together, I must say. It just leads me to ask you the question, which is, how did you get into coaching? What was your journey that led you to get involved?
Mm-hmm. Great question. Professionally, I had been an organization development consultant after I quit working for a salary with corporate organizations many years ago. So my focus was predominantly into leadership teams, and change in organizations. So as a result, the logical step for me was coaching. And without my realization, because in my country, coaching emerged sometime in 2006-07. That's when it came in. So prior to that, nobody knew really about what coaching was. And as an OD consultant, I had to deal with change, working with leadership teams, enabling leadership teams to not only envision empowering outcomes for the organization, but also inspire people to perform at the highest level. So my work took me into that space of consulting, and by virtue of consulting, there was loads of facilitation, there was loads of one-on-one chats with CEOs and other head honchos. So I was broaching into the space of coaching without realizing that I was coaching, so I thought I was probably consulting at that stage and maybe mentoring, sharing experiences. Until one point of time, it struck me. Someone said, hey, hold on to your know-how. Would you work with what the other guy knows first? And I said, wow, that's interesting. So how do I do it? How do I change my perspective? So that's when I started seriously listening. And listening is where it took me into coaching space from 2006-07. And from then on, it's been a great journey. So that's my journey into coaching.
Thank you.
And yes, it has been a great journey. And like I was telling Bernie, I keep bumping into you around the coaching world. You're everywhere. But let me ask you something. I'm And we won't hold you to this. We won't say you're the expert. But what always fascinated me was how coaching came to India, because I know it's still being resisted in, like, European countries. It's like, oh, I don't know. I think, you know, it's too close to therapy. What do you feel made India ready to accept coaching as early as, what did you say, 2006? What do you think some of those factors were?
Well, I would say when I reflect back, as you asked me the question, I think the openness in India to coaching came about much later than 2006. It was almost well past into 2011. That's when it came in. However, in 2006, when we look at it, I think we had a lot of people coming into the West, a lot of people coming here, and many companies in the West setting up their operations in India, given the economic benefits which they would receive by setting up shop in India. And one of the practices in these organizations was coaching, and that's what actually pushed coaching into. So it was easy to sell to an organization which had its headquarters in the U.S. or Canada or U.K. or any of the European companies who were setting in there, as opposed to Indian organizations, India-centered Indian organizations accepting coaching. So
that makes so much sense. Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead. I was just saying that really makes a lot of sense. I never thought about that, but of course, we were being influxed and coming here. That's fantastic.
True.
Thank
true.
You for that answer.
So the other important thing, if I continue for a minute more on that, is given the good management practices which are being, picked up. Now, one, with the advent of technology, the world has shrunk. And therefore, today, you have information at the touch of a button. Thanks to satellite televisions, internet, that information is sort of instantly available. So therefore, good management practices, right, and education coming up. And then, mind you, India is the youngest nation today, and as we speak. So with the millennial population being high and more people coming into or going outside India to study, and also with the advent of internet-based courses, so the awareness has certainly increased. And given that everyone wants to be good at performance, everyone wants to tap into their potential, feel satisfied, happy. And I know that most of my clients today keep talking about engagement surveys being conducted in organizations. And they are looking at good scores on engagement. And the only way for them to push the engagement score would be to tap into people's potential and create opportunities for people to perform. So therefore, there is a focus on creating ecosystem for performance, for enjoyment, satisfaction, happiness at workplace. Now, all these are directly connected with the work that we do as coaches. And the greatest thing which I think I thought I must tell you is, by nature, irrespective of the geography, culture, human beings are not resistant to change. I believe they resist being out of control. So our role as coaches is to help them become aware of their potential so that they can gain control, be in control, experience a sense of satisfaction, happiness, deliver greater performance, and feel empowered in the role. I think what I'm noticing right now is, gone are the days when people would say, I don't feel empowered. Today people say, I know where my empowerment lies, and I just need to sit down and talk. And the other important aspect is, If you look at the traditionally, if you look at the Indian historical perspective, India has been, the population, given the colonial regime, was subjugated. And now, when we notice, people have started realizing their rights, and people talk about their rights, they're able to engage. So the parented structure is changing now to more of an adult-to-adult kind of a scenario. So I believe that's a great, potential and benefit for coaches. When there's a lot of adult-to-adult engagement, it's that much more, conducive for coaching. So managers can coach external coaches can come in, internal coaching cultures can thrive. Yeah.
It raises so many questions in my mind. I'm thinking about when I was on the ICF Global Board and the various cultures that we dealt with. How is the Indian culture in terms of accepting coaching and working with you different maybe than cultures that you've met, like people who come from the U.S. or somewhere else? And so I'm just interested in how the culture affects the acceptance of coaching.
Well, traditionally, if I look at it coming from India, coaching was traditionally viewed as a service provided by an expat, right? So it was coaching was being imported there. Now, as we talk, there have been organizations which have come forward to tying up with Indian coaches and therefore offering coaching. So there are two important aspects to your question. One is acceptance of coaching from a cultural standpoint. There are a lot of readiness, A. B is that people are not just working on Indian timing. They're working on U.S. and European timing. And therefore, day in, day out, there are lots and lots of interactions that's taking place with other cultures. So cultural awareness is high. And therefore, the readiness is certainly there. Now, one interesting aspect which you look at it is, unlike the West in India, we have a larger power distance, right? So that's shrinking slowly, but then it's going to take time. It's going to be maybe another decade when we talk from now. Maybe the power distance will have reduced with the millennials all getting employed and the scenario might change. Otherwise, here in the West, we find there are no issues of power distance, right? So, which is relatively much shorter. And we don't have issues of micromanagement here. So, unlike which happens in India, because the managers want to be right, they want to ensure right things are being done. So, I'm digressing a bit to your question. So, in terms of acceptance, well, it's certainly high. So there are lots and lots of coaches from U.S. Coaching senior executives on the Indian side at this point of time. So I think, I'm certainly in competition. When I say I'm in competition, because when my services is being asked for, I'm sure I'm not the only one who's being called. And I know that that's probably somebody from this side of the world who's also being called in. And, what might happen is, despite the best of the approaches which I would choose to offer, I may still lose out for the simple reason that somebody believes working with someone from this side, they may enjoy a greater unbiased view of a coach to work with, as opposed to accepting someone of the same skin on the other side. Maybe they don't like to be vulnerable that side, as opposed to being vulnerable with somebody from this side. So I'm not sure if I got responded to your question in totality, but there's so many things there. Yeah,
I think so. I love your viewpoint and your enlightenment here, because we're thinking, we just view coaching from our view, and it's becoming so global, and that's fantastic. Let me ask you something about your practice, because. Mm-hmm. You were saying competition. Competition will keep you on your toes for sure. But you say on one of your websites, you say you help your clients overcome immunity to change. Tell me a little bit about that and tell me how you do that.
All right. So like I said earlier, by nature, human beings are not resistant to change, and what they resist is being out of control. So in order to be in control, now, one, people develop their own standard set of practices, which becomes their second nature, and naturally people are habituated to operate from what you call as the home base. All right, now, the home base was perhaps effective then, maybe not relevant in the current. So they have a traditional way of doing things, which would mean that people constantly asking questions about their habits and tendencies, and then looking at how their habits and tendencies are either aiding them accomplish results or becoming a stumbling block and consequently a barrier to accomplish their results. And by nature, when we talk about immunity, we're talking about the power of resistance. Okay, so therefore people resist change. Now, my role as a coach is to help them become aware of their habits and tendencies, so which could include some of their beliefs, learnings which they have had, which is perhaps not serving them in the moment. So maybe it was fine. So moving forward, it requires new learning and therefore change in behavior. So what we do is to help people to overcome some of their beliefs system, or what they call as competing commitments, which is holding them from accomplishing newer heights, or perhaps urging them to try newer ways of doing things to accomplish results. So as a coach, I help them become aware of what are their assumptions they are making, what are their values and beliefs about what they wish to do, and what is holding them from doing something. So for example, people may experience a set of what you call as stress, which I would say is a level of intellectual, physical, emotional stimulation to work towards a particular task. So therefore, it could mean that when people are stressed at that point of time, either we notice two aspects. One is where people actually are stressed to that level where they break down. Another is a set where people are stressed in the moment, however, they're shopping for alternatives. And maybe if they had someone, like how we say coaching is a co-creative process, which is thought-provoking and creative. So if they could have somebody who could help them think, create in the moment, and therefore muster the courage to test it out, then we have succeeded in helping them overcome their resistance to change, to look at what they could do. That could be one. A second could be a set of people who believe that I'm too good. I have the best of the capabilities. I don't need to change. Maybe you need to change the way you think or the way the situation is. Now, perhaps there we could actually look at working with the person to look at what's the identity the person holds and what could be the best identity the person can hold, who the person could be to the world, what kind of legacy could the person leave behind. So if he could appeal to the higher order purposes, then maybe we should be in a position to help the person to bring about the change. And that's what we do. And that's what I do by helping people. So if people are apathetic to change, to help them overcome the apathy, then we could always help them to become good. So maybe they are good to become trainers. If they're experts in their domain and they find their expertise is no longer being utilized, maybe they could pass it on to somebody else, you know, or more people who could learn and become like them as experts in the space. So does that answer, Laurie?
Yeah, that was a great answer. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking of dovetailing from that. I find so many clients with issues that you're talking about, become more aware of and more empowered, and but one of their challenges is the organization or their bosses are not of the same light, and so they oftentimes are more unhappy that what they're thinking about changing the organization isn't interested in or their boss isn't interested in. So what kind of challenges do you find your clients have dealing with other people within the organization that haven't been coached and don't have the same maybe points of view?
Right. Okay, let me give you an example. Now, there's this particular CEO that I'm coaching currently. Now, as the CEO, naturally, he would be the topmost person in the hierarchy and the pyramid. Now, unfortunately, the person has a designation as the CEO. However, there's somebody sitting above him as a managing director in the organization, and then the managing director is reporting into another sector head. All right. So what's emerging here is this is a very interesting scenario. This person is looking at bringing in changes into the organization, roping in costs, ensuring higher productivity, greater people engagement, and leading people who are nearing retirement and therefore wanting to cultivate newer crops within the the organization hierarchy. And at the same time, there are differing viewpoints from the managing director and the sector head. The sector head wants all the sectors in this area to perform because he, sitting on the board, needs to ensure that the board of directors are really seeing money coming in. Now, the managing director has to save a seat while the CEO has to drive the business. Now, this is a very interesting scenario. All right. So while working around here, so what emerged is from a leadership standpoint. Now, this person, it's also said a leader is always a very good follower, right? So I had to really help this person to identify what are leadership moments and what are followership moments. How does he influence? How does he learn to work with the differing power equations that he has with the managing director and the sector head? And what are some of the political system that exists within the board? And therefore, how does he ensure the board is also supportive? And mind you, this is a person who became a CEO only about a year back. Otherwise, he was heading a different organization and he was heading sales. So he had to come to pace to learn how to ensure operational efficiency within the organization. So he had to work across departments, win over departments, and especially when there are people who are fit enough to be his elder brother, probably at the verge of retirement. Now, when people on the verge of retirement, they have decided that, okay, I'm just going to ensure that I come into the organization the last 6 months to 1 year. And therefore, they are more used to a certain set of routine way of working. And then how he had to change their style of working really appealed to their higher order purposes. So that is a classic case of a system being apathetic. And here is a guy who's stressed, whereas he's got a system that is there is a lot of apathy within the system. And he had to really raise up the bar, work with everybody. And three consecutive quarters, he's been able to show profits. So that is a good experience that I had. So maybe when I get back, so that's when we'll be signing up the closure of the engagement, because we believe the person has really risen up. And maybe there could be an extension. So that's another side of the story.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So does that respond to your question, Bernie?
Yes, it's always a challenge within organizations.
Well, Cy, what kind of leaders do you think are needed now? I mean, what's different? Because we've all been through 2020, no matter where you're located. We had 2020. It's been insane. So what kind of leaders do you think are needed now, and what's different from the kind of leaders we used to have or need?
Well, at this point of time, classically when we are approaching 2021 and moving into 2022, I think the year 2020 was being a great leveler because it threw a spanner in the works and it called for classical management styles of leaders, which had to do with both managing chaos, putting out fires on one side, on the other side, inspiring people to believe in themselves, believe in the organization, and therefore give out their best. Okay, and many organizations have turned in good numbers, certainly. Though we say COVID was one period where it had eaten into savings of many people, but I believe many organizations have done good numbers as I see the results being published. And in my country, results will get published post-March, so which would be April, May. So in May, when we go get the results from most of the companies, when it's announced, then we will know what has been the impact of the year 2019-2020, all right, or 2020-2021, as we talk. So we work from April to March. Now, to address your question specifically, Laurie, two important aspects. Now, one, leaders needing to now become more of coaching leaders, engaging people, being able to listen to people, inspire people to deliver their greatest. And the other important aspect, which I say, which is the bane for most of the CEOs, is the board expects predictable results from them. Unfortunately, the market dynamics and people side of it are not predictable, and leaders will have to work in that kind of an environment. So we talked about UCA in the beginning of 2000, and now you see UCA has happened in real time, and we have seen what has happened. So the world is volatile, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity in the way things have been happening. So I believe leaders must use the multiple brains that they lead in their followers, be able to appeal to them, which would come only when they embrace a coaching culture. So which would mean that if they're able to ask leaders themselves to become coaches, if they're able to ask the soul-searching questions, listen to their people, be more present, then I believe that's what is the need of the hour at this point of time.
How prevalent is emotional intelligence is a focus in your coaching?
I don't call it as emotional intelligence. So as much as people would love to call it, but whatever said and done, self-awareness, self-regulation is a very important aspect when it comes to performance side. And then when it comes to organization, in organizations, you're not island. You're not operating in silos. So you have to be interacting. So the role that you occupy, which offers you the role identity, is juxtaposed alongside many role. And therefore, there are many points of intersection. So though it is juxtaposed alongside many roles, so there are inter-job role compatibility, which ensures greater team effectiveness. So therefore, there's interpersonal needs, or interpersonal skills, interpersonal awareness, interpersonal skills, and therefore being able to merge self and interpersonal so that you're able to work at your best. So call it emotional intelligence or call it people intelligence. So I believe it's a very important aspect. And when at my level and I'm coaching, I'm not just focused on what the person wants to achieve. We're also looking at who the person is. Right, so it's a whole organism coaching, and coaching the whole person is what we are looking at. So, no escaping that, buddy.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter what you call it. That's what we're all trying to do. Coach the whole person. Yes. We only have like 2 minutes left. Do you believe? I know that you founded something called Track Assessment. What makes that different than the other assessments? Can you tell us really quickly about that?
Well, Track Assessment Systems is an organization that's owned by my wife, and I'm a co-founder. So what we do there is we are distributors for some of the principals in the U.S. So we carry some of their tools and offer it. However, we have developed at this point of time, as we talk, developed a dual scale rating 360-degree feedback for individuals and leaders. Now, this is called Drishya. It uses a dual scale rating, and it's a highly customizable instrument which ensures 360-degree view and can be extended beyond the 360 to go to 720, which could mean the customers and the family as well. So, and that's a great tool for coaches especially.
That's one of the many things you've done. Let me tell people how they can find you, because first of all, Coaching for Excellence with the letter, not with the letter, with the number four, that's your coaching business, right?
Yeah, Coach for Excellence, that's right.
Coach for Excellence, letter four. Why do I keep doing that? Number four, Coach for Excellence. And also you can find Cy on LinkedIn. You can find him under Cy G, just the letter G. You don't have to go through the last name. If you want to find out more, because I'm telling you, there's no grass that grows under Cy's feet. He's always into something, which is fantastic. We are almost out of time. I want to thank you so much. I know you had a sore throat, so I appreciate that you came on and we made you talk so much. We appreciate you being on the show, Cy. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Lori. Thank you, buddy. Great.
Okay, take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.
We will see you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, we'll see you next month. Bye-bye.